This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Well, congratulations to the Baylor Bears. They are the national champs of men's college basketball, and they did it in grand style. An 86-70 win over Gonzaga, and it was a thumping from the very beginning of this game. All 40 minutes belonged to Baylor, waiting for Gonzaga to make a move, waiting for Gonzaga to tick one shot, get one turnover, make one play that would cut this lead down to enough that you felt like, oh, we could get a game, and it never happened. Scott Drew has done a fantastic job at Baylor since his arrival in 2003, but one thing always hovered around him, very much like Mark Few. When are you going to take a talented team to the championship? It's one thing to resurrect a dead program, and that was Baylor in 2003. And it is another once people realize, all right, I see what you're doing here, but now I need more. It's great that you're bringing in these kind of recruits. It's great that you're bringing in these transfer players. I'm glad we're able to be a 2 seed, a 3 seed, a 4 seed, but losing in the Elite Eight is not very good, or the Sweet 16 is not very good, or in the opening round is not very good. We actually want some hardware. And Drew got the hardware. And in this state of affairs that we live in sports, it does matter. You can be a great coach by graduating your players. You can be a great coach by having a program that does everything right by the metrics of the NCAA. You can be a great coach by consistently putting a program out there year in and year out that is capable of winning a national championship when other schools are not capable of winning a national title. But eventually you have to cut down the nets. He had been at Baylor a long time. 2003 is decades ago if you were talking about coaching. I mean, the way coaches leave programs, it's forever. But over the last few years, he has heard the critics wondering when he was going to do it. And this completes a remarkable turnaround for a program that was swimming in scandal. Swimming in scandal when he arrived in Waco back in 2003. All right, so how did Baylor do it? And should we be disappointed we did not get the matchup we were expecting? We'll talk all about that coming up next. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to get into the championship game last night. Later on in this hour, Sam Darnold traded to the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk about that. Receive a $5 rebate by trading up any non-contact thermometer towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters. Exergen is the only thermometer proven accurate by more than 80 clinical studies. Research shows no-touch thermometers miss many more fevers than they detect. With COVID continuing to spread, that's a risk you can't afford to take. Details at Exergen.com. Game last night was a dud. Let's be honest. It did not live up to the hype. But at the same time, when you get a game like this, where you have one versus one in the seedings or one versus two in the rankings, when you get a one-shot deal and you're expecting this epic battle and it disappoints, there's two ways you can look at it. One, be disappointed, right? That it didn't live up to the hype. This should have been down to the wire, last possession, back and forth affair, performances on an upper level. Or you can marvel at the way one team came all out firing. And that's what you did get last night. This was a Gonzaga team that was coming off an emotional, hard-fought game against UCLA. But they had 2 days to prepare for this. They didn't play this immediately afterwards. They had time to reset themselves. And Baylor, who dominated Houston, knew exactly what they had to do to dominate Gonzaga, which is we're the top three-point shooting team in the country, and we are going to show this. And they started hitting threes early. They got out to a 9-0 lead. In a blink of an eye, they had a huge lead, and they never let it go. Baylor never, ever relented in the way they rebounded, shot the basketball, defended. Everything they did confused the Bulldogs to the point where this game was never close. Now, we've had Super Bowls where, especially if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, we had Super Bowls where you'd have this great NFC team, but then you'd have this AFC team like John Elway and the Broncos or someone like that. You're like, well, all right, maybe we're going to get a good Super Bowl. And by halftime, you're playing ping pong because it's you just know Joe Montana ain't losing to these bums. But this game, I felt like any moment Gonzaga was going to turn on the heat, that Gonzaga was going to come back in this game, and they couldn't do it. They could not do it. Baylor was perfect in the way they executed defensively and, again, the way they came out with their game plan. This was a brilliant strategy by Scott Drew to make sure you came out heavy and strong. Be confident in who you are and what you've done all season. They are aggressive. They are quick. They can hit the three. And that's all they did in the beginning of this game. And raced out to the lead that they never came. They never gave up. So I spent a majority of my time last night in two phases, marveling at Baylor's ability to do this when no team was able to do this. No team. I mean, UCLA played with Gonzaga, but they didn't dominate Gonzaga. And two, waiting for this to be a game. Waiting for this to be tight. Looking at the clock, seeing 17 minutes left to go in the second half. Can Gonzaga make a run? Can they tighten this? Can they get it within five? Heck, can they get it within eight? And they couldn't. They couldn't do it. Now, I said at the top of the hour that, you know, you can do a lot of things correct as a head coach in college basketball, especially in the men's side. Graduate players, send out to the world great individuals who have been under your care for 3 to 4 years. Take a program and make it competitive. Make it so that people are considering you in the preseason as a team that's capable of winning the national championship. Doing that consistently time and time again, bringing in a quality recruits, bringing in quality transfers, all of those things. But eventually you have to win. You have to win this thing. Mike Krzyzewski felt it at Duke all the times that he had teams that would go to the final game and lose, 86 to Louisville, right? The final four of 89, the 90 team that lost by 30 to UNLV. Right before the semifinals against an undefeated UNLV team in 91 that had beaten them by 30 the year before, right? I mean, he was feeling the pressure of eventually I have to do this. Like, I have to cut down the nets. We don't do that to Mark Few. We don't do that to Gonzaga. We kind of wonder, but we still marvel at their incredible 20 plus year run from Cinderella to national prominence. And we sort of marvel at this small school from Spokane, Washington that dominates college basketball like they have. Baylor was a different story for Scott Drew. We've talked about Baylor's problems under Dave Bliss before, right? I mean, they had a player murder another player. And then there was a scandal that was on top of that scandal, and Dave Bliss resigns, and this program is a disaster. They've got every single enforcement agency of the NCAA breathing down their neck, going, what the hell happened here? And you're Scott Drew, and you come from a lineage of coaching, and Homer Drew, your Bryce Drew, your brother, you got this in your blood, and you take the job at Waco. And Scott Drew could have turned a few years at Baylor into something else, somewhere else, another program. Listen, I did my time. I resurrected a team. I got them out of probation. I did all of that. Now it's time to move on to the ACC or the Big Ten or wherever. But he stayed. He stayed and he built this program. And the perception of Baylor basketball began to change with it. No longer were the fans of Baylor more content with, thank God we've got the Dave Bliss scandal out from under us and the tragedy of a player murdering another player. They are now in contention to win, right? But they didn't win. They lost to Yale and Georgia State in the opening round of the tournament. They lost in Elite Eight. They lost in the Sweet 16. They couldn't get to the Final Four. 2020, he had a fantastic basketball team and was finally going to be the one that was going to win it all. And then COVID happened and we didn't get a tournament. So for 2 years, this sort of Baylor team had been waiting to see what it could do on the biggest stage. And when they got to this tournament, they put on a show. And this Final Four, they put on a show. Now, of the major sports that we have in this country, there's only three that are one and done in terms of postseason. Men and women's college basketball, college football, and the NFL. You could throw college hockey in there, but that's very, very regional, and so I'm not going to put that in the same category. Baseball is a series, NBA is a series, NHL is a series, right? But college football, NFL, and college basketball gives you this one shot, that's it. Now, when I was a kid growing up in the 80s, I watched Celtics, Lakers, that's what I wanted. Every NBA season, I wanted Lakers, Celtics. And I would watch Boston go through Chicago, Detroit, New York, Atlanta, Philadelphia. I mean, you name it, right? I mean, all these teams in the East. And then I would be assuming that the Lakers were doing the exact same thing in the West. And then they would meet. And they would meet in these seven-game series. And then sometimes you would get like the Memorial Day Massacre where Boston crushes the Lakers in game one, only to lose the series in six. That's what happens. In series, it's hard to get up for a one-shot game unless it's a game seven. But even in a game seven, you've seen six games between the two opponents. College football, college basketball, and the NFL gives you an opportunity to see this is it. They are meeting right now. Winner takes all. Done. Last night was one versus one. You couldn't ask for anything more than these are the two best teams in college basketball, and here's the stage. And yeah, if you're disappointed last night that you didn't get the epic battle that you wanted to see, a back and forth Jalen Suggs, Jared Butler, Cody Kispert, Maceo Teague, right? You didn't get that last night. And you can be disappointed because I'm disappointed, but you can also marvel at what you saw. You can be blown away that a basketball team came so prepared that the top team in the country had no answers. George Foreman tells this funny story about when he fought Muhammad Ali. And he said, I'm beating Muhammad Ali. I got him against the ropes, and I'm pounding him, and I'm punching him, and I'm punching him, and I'm just wailing on him. And Muhammad Ali looked at me and said, that all you got, George? And I looked and said, yeah, that's pretty much all I got. That's last night. Baylor kept punching and punching, and Gonzaga had nothing left. That's all they had. So marvel at Baylor, marvel at what they did, and marvel at Scott Drew, who for the last 18 years has risen this program from the ashes. And you can't ask a coach to go into a worse situation. We're not talking a couple of fake grades. We're not talking about a couple of payments. We are talking about a murder. We are talking about a scandal. We are talking about lying to cover up a scandal with the murder. It's a disaster. And 18 years later, he's cutting down nets because he stuck through it and he waited and he got the right kids and he brought in Jared Butler. He brought in guys who were willing to transfer in and buy into what he was doing. He got rid of an old system that didn't work and he went with a system that did. For the guys that he had, and they are the national champions. And Gonzaga, unfortunately, no fault in this, they've got to wait for Mark Few to be able to do the same thing. And that was last night. I really wanted a UCLA-type game. I really did. For what Gonzaga and UCLA gave us on Saturday, I wanted that kind of back-and-forth affair. But what made that game special was, as I was saying yesterday, it came because it was an 11 seed that didn't believe it would get blown out of that game. And so UCLA said, we are coming at you, Gonzaga, with everything that we can have. And Gonzaga said, and we're willing to take the fight, and we'll play back and forth. Last night, Baylor said, here's everything we got, and we know if we do this, you can't catch up to us. And that's what happened. Phenomenal performance by Baylor. Phenomenal. And a great tournament. And for a team that had to go 3 weeks on a COVID shutdown, came back rusty, weak, looked like, all right, we got some problems we got to fix. They fixed them. They fixed them. They got eliminated in their own conference tournament, but when they got to this thing, they were ready to go. And they were ready to go all the way through until the very end last night. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. More on this. We got the Jets trading Sam Darnold to Carolina. What would that mean for Darnold? What does that mean for the Jets? I think that's pretty obvious. As we continue along, love to hear from you. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Your thoughts on last night's game on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, if you're disappointed, I can't fault you. And I was. I'm not, listen, I can talk about all how great it was to watch Baylor do what they did. I really was expecting a show, and I didn't get it.
They were entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, Baylor, sure.
It was exciting to see that there was one team that could take it to Gonzaga as much as they did. But, yeah, I think we were all kind of hoping. I think we kind of got, what's the word I'm looking for?
In terms of?
Watching UCLA and Gonzaga.
Yeah.
You know, it was like we got a sneak peek at the presence early.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I thought we would get a similar type of game. You know, I thought we would get, you know, like a Villanova, North Carolina, you know, just kind of finals, which was like, man, this is back and forth. This is fun. This is going down to the wire.
Two teams just leaving it all out on the court and, you know, almost a Willis Reed moment where you're carrying somebody off the court.
Right. When it was 9-0, I was like, oh no. But then you think, well, this is a game of runs. This is runs. I mean, these happens all the time, and you just got to be on the right end of it. I mean, there was a comment that was made during one of the Arkansas games where Eric Musselman's dad had told him basketball is a game of three runs. You just control two of them. Right. And that's kind of the philosophy. And I remember when I used to do play by play, I was with a coach one time and I flat out asked him, I said, listen, you're a coach. I said, what's kind of like with 2 minutes left, where is the point if you're trailing, where at 2 minutes would you want to be to feel like you got a chance to get back in the game? He said, within 10. He's like, if I'm within 10 with 2 minutes, I feel like I got a shot to win the game. He goes, 11, 12, it's fine. But 10 is kind of the benchmark. If we're down 19, 20, 17, I tell my kids, let's get this to 10 with 2 minutes to go. So, and then you feel like I got a chance. So I have always, and that was years ago when I was told that, and believe me, it's one coach that told me, I don't know if he speaks for everybody, but it was always something that I kind of thought in a game like that, where it's like, all right, Gonzaga gets it to 10. Maybe we got a chance. That's it. It just didn't happen. Michael on Twitter, when Baylor got a 19-point lead, I thought if Gonzaga could get it within 10 at halftime, they could roll into the second half with momentum and get back into it. Yep, they did, but the second half never happened. You're right.
Yeah.
It's that even at 10 at halftime, you're like, okay, maybe we're interested. You know, like I was saying before, like during the 80s and 90s, during those Super Bowl blowouts, you knew it was going to be a blowout, right? You got the feeling with some of the, like the Bears weren't going to give it up. The Niners weren't going to give it away, right? The Washington wasn't going to blow it after scoring 35 points in the second quarter against Denver. You could do other things. This game didn't feel like you could just turn it off at halftime. Like, you kind of were like, well, this is Gonzaga, man. This is a team that can blow you out quick. And you didn't want to miss it if they did do it. But
I think that's what it was. You kept sitting there, and you just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And for me, the entire time, I don't even know if I was watching the game as much as I was watching the clock.
Yeah, you kept. I kept looking down. Yeah.
Kept looking down, like, all right, you know, yeah, there's enough time for them to make a good run right here. You can see that happening, and then
it just starts to dwindle, right?
Then you look down at the clock again. It's like, well, it's going to be a little bit tougher now, but they can still do it. Then by the time the 3 minute mark hit, you're like, ah, no, this is. Yeah. We're just watching a team just kind of dribble it out now.
And listen, I'm not a guy that feels bad for teams. I kind of cut my emotions that way. It's like, you know, you play, you win, you lose, right? But man, I did feel for Mark Few. I mean, he is really knocking on the door. And I remember, listen, I remember being younger and people making those comments about Mike Krzyzewski. Mike Krzyzewski would get to those. He took those Duke teams to those Final Fours in the 80s. And didn't do anything and could not beat Never Nervous Purvis against Louisville in 86. He couldn't win in Seattle in 1989. 1990, they go to McNichols Arena in Denver. They get blown out by UNLV. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, can Duke actually win this thing? And then they do. The floodgates open up and he's got five.
The only thing I think of is got to be frustrating if you're Mark Few. Because if you lost to... Say, you know, if you lost to Mike Krzyzewski or Jim Boeheim or Roy Williams, you're like, okay, you know what? They just know how to get here. But you lost to Scott Drew. You came in before Scott Drew. Scott Drew was able to turn his program around, bring it from the depths of you know where.
Yeah.
And, you know, win a title. Mark Few's like, yeah, but I've been doing this for a few years longer and I still can't get to the mountain.
I got an unbeaten team and I can't cut those nets. Yeah. But the thing about Mark Few and Gonzaga is a couple of things, right? So a lot of these other schools that play, you know, like Baylor, right? They play in the Big 12. The Big 12 this year was excellent, right? I mean, excellent.
It was.
I listed all the teams yesterday. West Virginia, Oklahoma, they went into the tournament weak, but that was one point. They were one of the hottest teams in the conference. Oklahoma State was very good. Kansas, obviously. Texas Tech. Texas had its moment. But that kind of sharpens your iron, right? I mean, it kind of, you play these teams, you play tough games all the time. People will point to Gonzaga and say, well, they roll through everybody they play in the West Coast Conference. I mean, they just plow through these teams, crushing Pepperdine and everybody else that they play. So if you're Mark Few, you know you've got a good recruiting base. Like, they've got one of the top international recruiters in the country, so they're always bringing in talent. He knows he's going to be back. He'll have a top seed again. People will be, you know, talking about how awesome they are. He's got to find a way to win six games in a three-week period against teams that are tougher and tougher and tougher and tougher every time you play them, right? I mean, look, we talked about it with yesterday. Saturday was the first time all season that Gonzaga got punched in the mouth, right? UCLA was like, we aren't messing around. Like, we're not rolling over here. And Gonzaga took that fight and took it to them and fought back and forth and made great plays and turned it into a classic with a classic buzzer beater at the end. But then you got to turn around and you got to do it again. You go into the locker room and you're like, hey, this Pac-12 team just punched us in the face. Tomorrow, a tougher Big 12 team is going to do exactly that. Right? I mean, that's how you can't train your kids for that. Like, you can't put your kids in that during the regular season. When they're winning games by 20-plus points, what happens when time, you know, at day, night after night, day after day during this tournament, you are preparing to face a team that is unlike any team you had in your conference schedule? None. And they were supposed to play during the regular season, and they couldn't get it together. They couldn't do it because of COVID and restrictions and all that. I would wonder if you could go back in time and Gonzaga could have played that game against Baylor, even if it's December and we're just kind of blowing off some cobwebs and shaking off the rust and getting into basketball shape. If maybe those players realized exactly the threat was that would face them when that team refined itself and came back in April. Maybe it's a different game. I don't know, but Gonzaga has this problem of they can't win six games in 3 weeks against competition that gets better and better and better all the way through. North Carolina proved it a couple of years ago. Baylor's proven it now. All the teams that they lost to with really good teams where they fell short of the Final Four. The tournament's tough, but Mark Few, man, one day he's got to be able to get this done. All right, coming up next, what was Carolina thinking trading for Sam Darnold? I think we got the answer for you. Coming up next, it's Sports Map Radio. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, got a mess that needs heavy cleaning? Tubbo Towels is for you. 90-count Tubbo Towels gets tough on all of the messes. Extra large, 10x12, heavy-duty cleaning wipes breaks the bonds that hold dirt and grease on the surface to clean just about anything. When I say anything, grease, oil, tar, adhesives, decals, brake dust, engine grime, ink, glue, wax, food, drink stains, bird messes. Use it on your car. Use it on your garage. Use it in your house. They are fantastic. I used it on my stove. Its stove looks good even today. They are made in the USA. Each wipe contains aloe vera, vitamin E, lanolin. So even though they're tough on messes, they're gentle on the hands. And the vapor lock lids snap shut. You get a strong tub, tight seal, cleaning wipes stay moist. I got like some cheaper ones in my garage that I had to throw out because even when I closed them, they got dried up. And they're like, well, I'm not using these. Tubbo Towels stay moist, ready to use when you need them. Again, Tubbo Towels available at O'Reilly, AutoZone, Advance, Napa, and Pep Boys. Tubbo Towels, you'll love them. All right, so Sam Darnold yesterday, the big trade. He is going off to the Carolina Panthers to work with Joe Brady and Matt Rhule.
Should
and Zach Wilson will probably be a Jet now.
Who?
Zach Wilson will probably be a Jet now.
Yep.
So, how do we view Sam Darnold after like a couple of years in New York? Like number 2018 draft, third pick overall, on a absolutely abysmal team with an abysmal organization, right?
Yeah. He's had, what, three head coaches?
Yeah. Is it all his fault, partially his fault, none of his fault? Because I'm going to tell you, even when you're a quarterback on a crappy team, win enough games so it doesn't put your team in a position to go, well, we could be taking this kid out of State U. I think he might be a better option for us. Like, win enough games so that you're in the, so that the team is like, well, if we really want the State U kid, we're going to have to give up the farm because we're picking 17th. Like, Sam Darnold didn't do that. The Jets didn't do that. They were terrible. But is Darnold, this is the question for Joe Brady and Matt Rhule. Do you see enough talent where he wasn't given that sort of coaching that you need? This kid's 23 years old. Are we ready to throw him out of the league?
The craziest thing I saw, and I'm hoping my math is somewhat accurate, but I saw that he's only 5 months older than Mac Jones.
Yeah. I think he's a couple months younger than Joe Burrow.
Yeah. So, right? I mean, still raw talent that needs to be developed.
Right. And Joe Brady is fantastic at this.
Yep.
And Matt Rhule is a fine, really good coach that, you know, looking for a guy that can mold. Now, if you're Carolina, you're not giving up a ton, but here's the question. You could have given up less.
Probably, right?
What, like, was anybody screaming to trade? Like, who are you competing against for Sam Darnold? For a Jets team that forced them to pick Zach Wilson and then give away Sam Darnold? Like force them to make that. You got the good. Take the BYU kid. Do it. And then you're going to need to get rid of your current starter. And we're right here to listen to what exactly you want for him. But instead, they give up three draft picks, including a pick in April. And Matt Rhule has a quarterback he can start developing, right? Robbie Anderson, he's teaming back up with him down in Carolina. He got Christian McCaffrey. So there's a lot of positives for Sam Darnold out of the Jets, even though the Jets have got a new coach, they got a new general manager, like there's a new approach to doing business in New York. He just goes, I need a fresh start. I'm getting out of here.
Honestly, I think it was a great move for the Panthers.
You know, I like it.
I mean, I wish they, you know, I was kind of curious to see what they would do with Teddy Bridgewater. Now they're probably going to ship him or move him someplace.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this is a good move for the Panthers because you got a young quarterback that hasn't really been developed yet. He hasn't had that opportunity with the Jets.
And this goes back to something that does drive me crazy, though, about this league. It, and it, 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 and maybe it's the more the fans than the league, but we are really quick to bury a young quarterback when he doesn't come out of the gates roaring immediately. For every young quarterback that does that, there are plenty that do develop over time, that do need the right circumstance. I mean, he was handed Adam Gase and a number of other head coaches and that didn't fulfill any. He had mononucleosis. He turns over the ball a lot. He was lacking some weapons. All of the things that people are saying, in the end, he's responsible. I mean, in the end, let's not, he's not an innocent victim in the Jets' failures over the past 3 years. When he played, he didn't play particularly well. All of the reasoning aside, he is still the starting quarterback, and you're paying him enough money to overcome a lot of the deficiencies of the team. Like, you know, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and the elite quarterbacks, they're elite because not all the time do they have everything working for them, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and they're elite because there have been games where the defense stinks and they have to still find a way to win. There are games where their leading targets are being double covered and they have to make household names of guys you've never heard of. Like, that's their role. Their role isn't to just go, well, if everything's perfect around me, then I'll play good. Like, you're elite because there are times where things aren't perfect and you still are expected to win. Even if it's ugly, even if it's tight, you're still expected to win. Darnold doesn't do that. He didn't do that. Everyone who's saying the Jets lack this, the Jets lack that. Yeah, but 3 years into the league, he's supposed to show enough that he can do good things even under these dark circumstances. He didn't do that, but that doesn't mean at 23 years old, he's not capable of doing that under a new coach and a new system and a new offensive coordinator. Like, for Carolina, they're looking at their future going, listen, in a couple of years, this kid's going to be a free agent anyway. We're picking up a good chunk of his salary, but it's not detrimental to what we're trying to do. If he works out, great. If he doesn't, what did we really give up for him? Like, he's not getting, you know, he didn't get Deshaun Watson first round list of, you know, of here, take everything we own for the next 5 years for Russell Wilson. Right? Like, that's not what's happening here. They got a great few draft picks. They get a quarterback they can see if the book has been closed on him or if the book is still open on him. And I think that's smart because, look, Robert Saleh comes, he wants his guys. He's getting an opportunity to draft a quarterback under him in a system that he can. Sam Darnold, if you felt like, man, I can't work with Sam Darnold, but Sam Darnold can work in this league, this is what you do, right? This is what you do. So I think it's good for the Jets because now they get their guy, they get a fresh start. The kid is eye-popping, this Zach Wilson. He's eye-popping. He'll make you go nuts with the way he throws the ball. Everyone will be excited again, and then we'll see where that goes. And Darnold gets to be 23, fresh start, second team, and see if he's got a chance to make it in this league. Look, I don't want to compare him to Carson Wentz because it's kind of too. But remember, you know, when Carson Wentz went to Indianapolis, we said the same things, right? Frank Reich, a guy who knows him, he's going to have a better offensive line. He's going to be able to run the ball. I mean, look, the list of things that Indianapolis could do that Philadelphia wasn't capable of doing made you feel like, yeah, this is great. Good for him. He's got a second chance. The same kind of things can be said about Sam Darnold. New coach, one of the best offensive coordinators in the game, in Joe Brady. In terms of the way he knows football, right? Christian McCaffrey's on that team. You know, he's being reunited with Robbie Anderson. There's a lot of things to like at Carolina, right?
No, the Jets. That's why I think it's fantastic. I mean, yeah. He finally has like good weapons, decent weapons.
Yeah, we'll see.
I anytime you get to pair up with a player like Christian McCaffrey, I mean, that's got to be a saving grace for any quarterback, right?
Well, except Teddy Bridgewater, now lost his job.
Yeah, true.
But McCaffrey was hurt so a couple times. So. But look, we'll see. Look, I'm not making a prediction on Darnold. I have no idea. Like maybe he'll stink and be a free agent and be a backup quarterback somewhere or start for a lousy team and just kind of hang around the league just long enough to be like, now I'm 30 and I'm on a broadcast team somewhere, right? Maybe that's what happens to him. Maybe, just maybe, he becomes a good, you know, he doesn't need to be a superstar, but a good enough quarterback that he's playing pretty well. But that's the gamble that Carolina's taken. They can't get a quarterback. They can't get a quarterback in the draft. So why not just say, all right, we'll take a young guy. You know, they tried the Teddy Bridgewater thing. It's not working. Let's go here. And they don't have to give a lot for him. I think the one question people are asking, though, is when you have a team that, like when you're looking at the Jets and you're predicting where they're going and you're in the office, you're sitting at your conference tables or you're on Zoom or whatever it is you do these days, and you're saying, okay, what do you think the Jets are going to do with that number two pick? Well, it looks like they'll take a quarterback. It looks like they'll take Zach Wilson. That's all what we're hearing. They're definitely going to be taking a quarterback. All right, so what are they going to do with the other guy? Well, they're likely to get rid of him. All right, so when we should make a call to them? As soon as possible. That doesn't seem like a smart way to do it. Like, it seems like you would go, well, let's see if we can drive the cost of that down, right? What would the Jets be willing to do to get rid of this guy once they do draft the quarterback? Because I'm telling you right now, no organization wants to have a 23-year-old kid as their starting quarterback drafting another young kid and then giving him the keys to the kingdom. Like, that's very awkward. Yeah, it's one thing when your quarterback's 37. You're like, this is how we're doing this. You want to stick around, but, you know, this is what we're doing. But when you got a kid that you drafted 3 years ago, he's 23, and you're like, and then welcome Zach Wilson to the Jets organization. He's going to take his places. This other guy, we'll find a room for him. All right, he becomes like Milton in Office Space, right? Yeah, I got to send you downstairs. Sam Darnold's like, my stapler, can I take it with me?
We're just not going to pay him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We fixed the glitch. He won't be receiving a paycheck anymore. Right? That's what you don't want that. You want to be like, we can't have Sam Darnold asking questions, being like, well, I guess I'm in a quarterback competition, and everybody in the media laughing in your face. No. This ain't no competition.
Yeah, you've been promoted a clipboard holder.
Right, exactly. They don't draft a kid with the second overall pick to make a competition for the job. You're going someplace.
Can you imagine him sitting there, somebody telling him, but I was third.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but that's not second.
It's not second. But everyone said I was going to be first. No one said Zach Wilson was going to be first.
Right, exactly, right. Been so true. So, all right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Next hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming your way as we continue along with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. So, you know what I missed last night? In all of my, all right, this game's kind of a dud. I missed one shining moment.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Was it good? Did you watch it?
I watched it.
Was it good?
It was good. There were a lot of people posting to Twitter that it moved them to tears. I didn't get that feeling.
Come on, please. What?
Yeah. You know, it was because, this has been 2 years in the making. I'm like, oh, come on.
Oh, stop.
You know,
please.
This is not 2 years in the making.
Cry me a river with you. Give me a break. Move me to tears.
But, you know, but it was, you know, there is something nostalgic about it. But I will say this. I don't know if it's been this late ever. You know what I'm saying? Where it's. It just felt like they kept pushing it off. Like, you know, they kept going down. Like, hey, is it ready yet? No. Yeah, I need five more minutes.
Yeah, we got to put it together. I just, like, I was done with the game, and then I went in the bedroom, talked to my wife, and I was going to go back to it. And then we just ended up talking, and then I back the news was on, and I was like, oh,
it is what it is. You know, all the fun highlights that you remember from each of the games, and
I don't hate one shining moment. I think it's a little overblown sometimes. But it's a tradition. It's pretty cool. It's like the Masters music. The Masters music is a little sappy for Augusta National, but you know, it is what it is. It doesn't change. And one shining moment's been around forever, and it is a cool way to recap the tournament. And then that's really the point, right? The point isn't to show you highlights of Baylor winning the championship. They show you everything. Fun stuff. They show you everybody that was in and the good moments and the cool moments and the little school that won the one game only to get blown out 2 days later. Like they remind you of what the tournament was.
Yep. I mean, you know, included Oral Roberts' magnificent run. And,
exactly.
And, the guy's name's escaping me. The kid from Alabama who tied it up against UCLA.
I'm already forgetting that kid's name, and he was fantastic. Shoot.
You know, the one cool moment I did, you know, that I thought was like, you know, that is kind of awesome to see. You know, they had a little clip, if you will, you know, a second and a half maybe of Buddy Boeheim and Jim Boeheim.
Oh, that's cute.
You know, just Buddy Boeheim nailing a shot like he did all tournament long, and Jim Boeheim like with his arm around Buddy, and I was like, yeah, that's kind of fun. I mean, that, you know, you think back like what this tournament really, you know, is. I mean, you know, we might think about coronavirus, may not, but you know, we'll probably think about, oh, you know, the Boeheims got to share a really cool moment.
Cool. Did they show Oregon State leaving the hotel and getting kicked out?
No, they didn't show that.
Did they show
surprised.
VCU in masks and bubbles leaving Indianapolis?
No pictures of gyms either.
Right? Yeah.
No pictures of, you know, what the men's gym looked like.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Right. No pictures of the men's gym and its buffet.
Or its buffet of food.
Buffet of food.
They
we're throwing this away. We can't even finish it.
They forgot to include that. But, you know, it's one shining. It is what it is. I mean, you know, it's what we all, you know, what we've come to expect from one shining moment.
It was pretty, you know, one thing was really cool to see the Baylor kids at McLean Stadium in Waco celebrating on campus.
Yeah.
I always like that. I always think it's awesome when the students are gathered in one place and watching the game. It's always cool, like when they're in the gym and they're all watching it on the big screen. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I was glad to see that for Baylor, your national champs. First time in school history, they won a men's basketball championship. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.